And joining us now, Mark Lambrecht, and he is with the Montana Electrical Cooperative Association. Big name, represents a lot of people in Montana. So, Mark, you know, you're the expert. So talk to just start at the beginning. Tell us what happened and when this happened, this White House conversation. And then we'll get into how this is impacting people, not only in Montana, but Oregon, Washington, and Idaho.
Okay. Well, thanks, Rick. And first of all, I just wanted to talk a little about who I represent.
Perfect.
So, an Electric Cooperatives Association is the nonprofit organization representing the interests of 25 electric cooperatives in the state of Montana. We cover electricity distribution to about 400,000 Montanans, so about 40% of the state of Montana.
And I'm one of them.
Yeah. Rick is a member of Vigilante Electric Cooperative, whose headquarters is in Dillon, Montana, down in the southwestern corner of the state, but their territory extends all the way up to Townsend, Montana, just east of where I am in Helena. So our Western Montana cooperatives, including Flathead Electric Cooperative out of Kalispell, Lincoln Electric Cooperative out of Eureka, Missoula Electric Cooperative, Ravalli Electric Cooperative down in the Bitterroot, as well as Vigilante, these are the Western Montana co-ops that receive a significant portion of their electricity from the Columbia River system, namely the lower Snake River dams in southeast Washington. So these are a critical resource for providing electricity, particularly in the winter, when there's significant demand for electricity to keep the lights on and keep everybody's homes and businesses warm.
Well, yeah, because so people understand too, especially the Oregonians in our audience, when it's minus 52 after the wind chill factor, we're talking without heat, you won't survive. I mean, you can't live in that. And it's a matter of life and death when you're getting into that minus 52 degree temperature stuff.
Absolutely. And the reason that hydroelectricity produced by dams is so important is its baseload generation. And just for your viewers, I'll explain. Baseload generation is that electricity that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, as opposed to intermittent renewable generation, such as wind or solar, which produces electricity when the wind is blowing, solar when the sun is shining, and then with battery capacity to store that electricity.
So what you're telling people is the dam is a much more dependable source, because even I toured the Canyon Ferry Dam, and I didn't know that even when the dam, kind of the water slows down, the turbines are still moving. I mean, mm-hmm. And it just, so you're always having power in there, whereas it's a system that never fails, and you've got, you know, I mean, doesn't stop creating power. Whereas with solar, if the sun's not shining, you don't have solar energy. If the wind's not blowing, you don't have any wind energy. Exactly. So it's the most reliable source of energy. And they're talking about taking four dams out of the Snake River system.
And the reason hydroelectricity is one of my favorites is because, first of all, it's carbon-free. It's from a renewable resource, water. And as you said, it's always generating electricity, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less, depending on how much water is in the reservoir behind the dam and how much water is able to flow through the dam. So the issue that some environmental groups and tribal nations have with dams, particularly those on the Columbia River system, is when they were constructed, they created an impediment for salmon runs and steelhead runs to go from the Pacific Ocean up to the headwaters of the Columbia River system. However, since that time, ratepayers have paid $16 billion, billion with a B, into fish passage and other fish restoration mitigation measures. It's about $1 billion that Montana ratepayers have paid into this over the years.
So there's a system in place that the fish are using,
mm-hmm. yep.
to get up the stream. So is it effective?
It is effective. In fact, since those investments have been made, 96% of summer migrating fish and 93% of stream juvenile salmon are surviving and making their way around these impediments. So the investments are working. In my opinion, it negates any argument to breach those dams or change the way that they're operated. And we'll get into that about this settlement agreement. But I just wanted to set the table there that the Bonneville Power Administration, which is a federal entity charged by law under the Northwest Power Act to market the electricity generated by those dams to the co-ops and other public utilities and other investor-owned utilities in the region, they have charged the ratepayers $16 billion for those fish mitigation measures.
So if those dams are breached, not only will my power rates go up and the cost of transporting products up and down the Columbia River go up, but that $16 billion investment is gone.
Well, it's still there because there's infrastructure that has been constructed.
But will they use it if they're breaching dams? Are they going to still?
It depends on what options they might choose for breaching.
So what's the problem if that number of fish are getting up the dam, up the river? So what's the problem? Why the need to breach these dams?
I have the same question. So from what I understand, the environmental groups that brought on the initial litigation and the other sovereigns that we'll mention believe that these dams should be free flowing with no impediments and provide historical runs of salmon from the mouth of the Pacific up to the headwaters without any man-made infrastructure that could be an impediment to those movements.
So talk to me about this meeting at the White House. What was going on with this?
So what happened, Rick, is I became aware of developments on this with a conversation with the Public Power Council. That's a nonprofit organization to which our co-ops belong, many other publicly owned utilities in the states of Idaho, Oregon, and Washington are also members. They were involved in the conversations regarding years-long litigation over whether or not to have operational changes and breaching of the Lower Snake River dams in the Columbia River system. They became aware that there was a settlement agreement at hand that would ask a district judge in Oregon to grant a stay to the litigation for at least 5 years, probably up to 10 years. And then this settlement agreement would be put into place by the administration and the six sovereigns, the states of Oregon and Washington, four tribal nations, where there would be operational changes for the hydroelectric system in the region, discussions about breaching the four Lower Snake River dams, transferring authority over fish and wildlife management decisions and funding away from the federal government and over to these six sovereigns. So issues like that we became aware of. We became aware that the stakeholders involved in these discussions were prohibited from discussing them. Members of Congress were prohibited from knowing about this agreement. And it finally came out when a group of four members of Congress from the states of Idaho, Oregon, and Washington leaked this settlement agreement out to the public and in the form of a letter to the president objecting to the terms of the settlement agreement. There was a deadline of December 15th, 2023 for the judge and the administration to decide whether or not to move forward with this settlement agreement. And finally, the district judge in Portland issued that opinion that there would be, that granted the stay on the litigation and set forward in motion this agreement between the administration and the six sovereigns.
So isn't there supposed to be a public comment period?
Normally there would be. Normally you would think that an issue of this magnitude that affects this many people in the region would have had a public process. The folks that were involved in it said, well, this isn't appropriate for a public process. This is a settlement agreement to ongoing litigation, and therefore there is no public involvement requirement.
So what happens? So this is a done deal, at least in terms of the Biden administration and the sovereigns and the states of Oregon and Washington.
So it's a done deal right now in terms of the stay to the litigation has been granted by the judge. The White House has accepted the terms of the agreement. But I have to be clear, the terms of the agreement do require action on behalf of Congress in order to be executed. So Congress has the sole authority over operational changes to federal dams. That's issue number one. Congress also has the authority over any federal appropriations. So, and federal appropriations would be necessary
to tear down those dams.
To implement those operational changes. Congress also has authority over whether or not a federal dam can be breached.
So for Montana, I know because I read some of the articles, it's 220,000 ratepayers would be impacted by this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in Montana, over 200,000 ratepayers could potentially see a 50% increase.
What? Hold though. Wait. I didn't see that number.
Yeah.
50%?
So, mm-hmm. The Bonneville Power Administration, as I mentioned before, which markets the power generated in the region to the utility customers, they did a ratepayer analysis of what it would do should ratepayers lose access to the megawatts produced by the federal hydroelectric dams and then have to be replaced with some other form of electricity. Now, the replacement power that would be called for in this settlement agreement is in two forms. Number one, the utilities would have to acquire replacement power out on the open market, which can be very expensive and very variable in cost. Number two, it commits the federal government to transferring a lot of money over to these six sovereigns so that they can develop alternative replacement sources of electricity. We expect that would be solar and wind.
If you can't get enough out of wind and solar to make it reliable. So what happens in the winter in Montana when we don't have reliable power? We're going to be like California, you know, where we have rolling blackouts and
so what happens,
third world country.
Yeah. What happens is two options. Number one, you go out on the market and try to acquire enough power and firm transmission to bring that power into the region. If you're unsuccessful in doing so, which is becoming more and more of a reality, then yes, you do face rolling brownouts and blackouts.
So when you hear about a secret meeting and people don't know about it and nobody's heard about it and it gets leaked out, doesn't that tell you, I mean, maybe you can't comment on this. I don't want to get you in trouble. I can. That always says to me, that's a big giant red flag that says to me something, we're supposed to be about we the people and doing what's right for human beings. But do they, you know, do they not suspect that we're going to come out of our chairs knowing that our electric rates already went up this year a lot, and now we're going to do that 50% again? Mm-hmm. I mean, I would hope that the public would just be madder than hell.
And Rick, I'm not afraid to comment on that yet. That's not the way to operate government.
That's not public process.
Not public process. And we, the Montana Electric Co-ops, did our best, as did our partner organizations in Oregon and Idaho and Washington, did our best to make sure that the public understood what was going on here. And so we initiated a grassroots campaign in Montana to make sure that all of our members understood what the stakes were. We got our national organization, the National Rural Electric Cooperatives Association, to do the same thing. They put out a campaign trying to get ratepayers to sign a petition that would go to the White House objecting to not only this agreement, but the process in which it was involved. More than 20,000 petitions were signed, and you know, the response was fantastic in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana.
So
the radio multiple times, at op-eds, letters from our members of Congress to the White House. There's been public hearings on the House side. The House Energy and Commerce Committee had brought in federal officials and grilled them about this process and the whole idea of changes to the Columbia River management.
Well, it seems kind of just odd that at a time when we know that we're energy deficient, and you know, most of us who are level-headed, research-based readers and educated people, we understand that wind power and solar power, while awesome, are not ready to take up the slack for a reliable source of energy like hydro. And the same environmental people who bitch and moan about hydro and won't even look at nuclear power. It's like, that's the most carbon-friendly, climate-friendly power you can have on the planet. And they won't look at it, which tells me something's wrong. If you really cared about the grid and making sure people had power, that would be, you'd be looking at a clean power source. And the other thing, Mark, that bugs me about this is, you know who always suffers for this the most? Is the poor. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's I'm going to be able to afford it's going to hurt my budget a lot, and I'm getting close to retirement. And anybody else watching here, to have a 50% increase, I think our bill this month was like $225. To pay $500 a month, you know, for electricity, that's not, I can manage it, but it's not doable. Mm-hmm. But think about people living on a fixed income, and you start putting a 50% increase on their power bill. What do you skip a meal? Do you not drive the car to work? I mean, you know, these are decisions, and these people, kind of the do-gooders who are, you know, we want, it's like they don't want humans here anymore. I mean, hydro is a great source of power, and you take that out, and what are you going to have?
So there's a lot to unpack there, Rick, but you're spot on. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is the role of hydro in the grid. So one thing people might not be aware of is how important hydroelectric power is in terms of balancing the grid. So the transmission lines have to be balanced between supply and demand, and transmission. And hydro plays that role very well because it's dispatchable. With one phone call from a balancing authority, those are the ones that control the grid, such as, you know, investor-owned utilities, Bonneville Power Administration is a balancing authority. They make a call over to the operators of a dam and say, hey, ramp it up, ramp it down. And that all happens within minutes. And so that's what allows that balance to occur within the system. It allows intermittent generation, such as wind and solar, to be brought into the system and balanced. If we couldn't have that balance from baseload generation that's dispatchable, like from hydro, it'd be nearly impossible to integrate renewable energy into the grid. So people need to keep that in mind. Another thing you brought up was the disproportionate impacts on low income with a significant rate increase. Yeah, it's real. And we have many, many communities in Western Montana that are dependent on the lower cost electricity that is provided by our co-ops. They would see great harm from this. And I want to mention a couple more. Glacier Electric Cooperative on the east side of Glacier National Park is the home of the Blackfeet Nation. their power is almost 100% provided by the Bonneville Power Administration. So they're heavily dependent on the low-cost, reliable power provided by the Columbia River system. And you want to talk about a economically challenged area of the state, Glacier County, the Blackfeet Reservation, it fits that to a T. So you're going to have a disproportionate impact, not just on Western Montana, but also on our tribal nations as well.
So I'm going to say something that'll probably get me in trouble, but that's okay. So while there's going to be people in the Northwest who are going to go, well, this is the tribes, we're helping the tribes. So if you're helping, with these fish and that kind of thing, but you're screwing another tribe. So you can't, you've got to do your homework and figure this kind of stuff out, because while it looks like a tribal issue and people will use that as that, there's also tribe people who are going to be very heavily damaged by this decision as well.
Absolutely.
Can you explain to people in Oregon, Washington, and maybe Idaho, you tell me if I'm wrong, but how will this impact them? Because while your co-ops, you're representing 220,000 people over here, but Oregon and Washington, there's going to be people suffering the same kind of thing over there. Or is that true or not true?
That's absolutely true, Rick. So, Montana is a sparsely populated state when compared to Idaho and Oregon and Washington. And if the impacts are that significant to Montana, imagine what they're going to be for other states in the Northwest. They pull a lot more power out of that region than even Montana does. I don't have the specific numbers of ratepayers that would be impacted by megawatts, but I know it's more than what we're facing here. But you touched on something a few seconds ago, too, that I wanted to mention as well, that it's not just the electricity impacts that are at stake here. The Columbia River system is important not only for generating electricity, but also for navigation. There's barges that move Montana grain and agricultural products produced in those other states. Irrigation for farmers and ranchers. Municipal water supply for all of the communities that go along the Columbia River system. How about recreation? When you're changing the operation of dams, then you're lessening the availability of water and reservoirs that's important for fishing and boating and other recreational
places. And windsurfing in Hood River, Oregon, which is providing a huge economic boost for tourism along the Columbia River. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the big pictures that I think people forget to look at. We get caught up on, a few issues, and we forget to look at the big picture. Now, I know for a fact, because from working in news in Eugene and Springfield, that the BPA, for you folks that live down in that part of the valley, they supply, you may get your power from Eugene Water and Electric Board or the Springfield Utility Board, but they're buying power from BPA as well. So it's coming from, you're still, just because you live 110 or 20 miles south of the Columbia River, that river is still powering your home as well. So that's where some of that's coming from, is where probably a huge portion of it's coming from there.
Another important factor that I hadn't mentioned yet is flood control. Dams are particularly helpful in controlling fluctuations in water flow and controlling dams, which can wipe out downstream communities and farms and environmental and cultural resources. There's a lot of other beneficial purposes to dams. Should we breach the dams and lose the ability to control that flow, the repercussions are going to be significant.
I did a video for the Army Corps of Engineers down in the Eugene area. It was the Portland branch, but I did it for the Eugene because they were looking at Fall Creek and some of these dams down in that area. When they didn't have those dams, what people forget is Eugene used to flood. So mm-hmm. You take out those dams and Eugene's going to be underwater. And, that I think it's really easy to have this, virtue signaling. Oh, look, we're restoring all these horrible mistakes that we made. Well, they weren't horrible mistakes. They were there for a reason. Flood control. They were there to provide electricity, and they still need to be there for flood control and to provide electricity. And what I don't understand is we've created, it sounds like, from what you're telling me, a system for the most of the fish to get back up there. So is when you're putting human, do humans get to play a part of this whole equation? Or are we just always the ones who get screwed by the environmental community because they have this pristine idea that we can turn the world back to, you know, 1854 or something, when I don't think a lot of us want to live in 1854. I don't want to go back to having kerosene lamps and pooping in an outhouse. And I think most people in the Northwest and Montana would probably feel the same way. And I think this is just, Mark, to me, this has just gotten way out of hand. And the fact that Biden administration is doing this secretly tells me a whole bunch more than I need to hear. And that just says, you knew if the public was educated about this, that they would come unglued. I hope, anyway. I think my biggest fear, Mark, is what I said at the beginning, is the biggest problem we have in this country, right? One of the biggest problems is apathy. And the second is ignorance, not being willing to go, oh, I feel so bad for the fish. Well, what about the poor? And what about the people who can't afford a house? I mean, here's another thing. How is someone, we're talking about affordable housing and all over the country. How is that going to make a house, you know, getting a house more affordable when your water's coming from your electricity? You know what I mean? We're pricing people right out of even being able to have a home. I mean, they can't even afford the water for the home.
So you mentioned, are we taking humans out of the equation? My answer to that would be only some humans are getting to make the decisions here.
And okay, explain. Can you explain further?
Yeah, so, you know, the humans that are involved with the environmental groups and the six sovereigns and those in the administration, those are the ones that are making the decisions here, but they impact all of the rest of us.
So these particular tribes and these particular politicians and these environmentalists who all have a goal are impacting the rest, hundreds of thousands, actually over a million people because of Portland and all that. I mean, it's going to, you know, just them. They got more people in there. And then when people want to say, well, it is the sovereigns, well, then what about the Blackfeet? Mm-hmm. So that's going to affect another tribe. So do you really care about the tribe or you only care about these tribes because they have the political power? And what about this tribe that doesn't have the political power? So that's how it works. That's how people. So it's how much power you have that you can take away our power.
And I'll share with you some of the inside info that I've learned because I brought that question up too, with some of my conversations with administration folks. I said, you know, not every tribal nation benefits from this. There are only four that benefit from this agreement, and there are definite significant impacts to many of the other tribal nations in the Northwest who don't share in these benefits. And I was told their benefits are coming later. There's going to be other agreements that help them. So chew on that. The other thing is learn from one of my colleagues in another state who had a conversation with a highly placed administration official and brought up all the arguments that we're talking about today and said, hey, you know, we understand utilities' concerns about impacts to the grid and ratepayer impacts and all of those things. But you must understand that our number one priority is tribal justice and tribal economic opportunity. And they believe that this is their highest and best use of their political capital right now.
Who's
the administration,
the Biden administration,
number one priority. So
because I don't want people to get the wrong idea. And if you do, that's your choice to be, you know, to get that. I'm not against tribes. I'm very close to the tribes in Oregon. I've done some, you know, amazing work with them and they're wonderful people. And I think they deserve to be, you know, have they're wonderful working people. They do their thing. But when we start looking at creating problems for millions and millions of people so that we look like we're kind, you know, what? And then you're screwing the Blackfeet over here with the power rates. What I just don't understand, you know, how that it can be acceptable to people. Mm-hmm. And I know there'll be people that will just come after me for that, but it's like, you can, you know, I've learned a long time ago, it's none of my business what other people think of me. But if we don't ask these questions, and if people in the Northwest, I live here too, God dang it. You know, I'm a Native American. I was born a native in America. I'm a native Oregonian. I'm now a transplant Montanan. I get to be here too. And so I should get a say in how this works as well. And I hope people, what do people, I can see the emails now.
Oh, well, I want to follow on you. I mean, we have many tribal members that are members of our organization, and There are, you know, seven reservations in the state of Montana. They're tribal nations, they're Montanans. We do have other Western Montana tribal nations that are cooperative type of organizations. There's Mission Valley Power, which markets electricity in the western part of the state, operating the dam that used to be called Kerr Dam on the Flathead River. So certainly this agreement is going to significantly impact not just the Blackfeet Nation, but also the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes.
So this is really about protecting the tribes that have the most power to go to the Biden administration.
Well, I don't know if that's it. It's just these are the ones that are have historically utilized that river resource and for their cultural and sustenance fishing. And they were the ones that were involved in the litigation with the National Wildlife Federation, Earth Justice, States of Oregon and Washington, you know, that ultimately evolved into the six sovereigns. But
I respect that. You know, I mean, that they had that land, but are they getting enough fish as is, or is it all about restoring it to what it was? Because nothing, we can't restore Oregon, Washington. We can't restore the United States back to what it was in the 1850s. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got highways, we have millions of people living here. You know, whether you like it or not, it changed. And so as long as you're getting that we're showing respect and people are getting the fish that they need, why can they go in and impact the Biden administration, come in with these sovereigns and with the environmental communities and do damage to the entire Northwest and people? Is that our punishment?
Yeah, I can't speak to the motivations there. I just know that, you know, these are the impacts of this agreement going forward.
So what can people, so where are you guys at with it? You're fighting it. Are you taking it to court? I don't know what that process would be.
So good question. So Rick, we asked the governor of the state of Montana, Greg Gianforte, and our attorney general, Austin Knudsen, to join the state of Idaho, which brought suit in the Ninth Circuit, which was centered around retroactive application of the Endangered Species Act. So the challenge there was that since these facilities were constructed prior to enactment of the Endangered Species Act, the Endangered Species Act shouldn't apply to the dams. And therefore, in order to save a threatened species, you know, certain species of salmon, there shouldn't be these drastic measures implemented to change the operation or breach these Lower Snake River dams. That challenge failed. The judge rejected that argument. However, the Public Power Council, which I mentioned before, has brought suit in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that is a challenge that this agreement violates the statutory obligations of the Bonneville Power Administration to provide electricity resources in the region. So the Northwest Power Act obligates this federal marketing entity, the Bonneville Power Administration, to operate those dams, market that electricity to consumers in the Northwest. And therefore, this agreement is a direct violation of the Northwest Power Act and a violation of BPA's responsibility to provide that power. So it'll be interesting to see what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals does with that case.
Well, they're pretty far left. I mean, I've covered that for 30 years, and they don't, and I got nothing against that, the being whether they're Democrat or Republican, but they don't often side with regular people, you know, they're always taking that stand. But then it'll go up the court ladder, and maybe it'll go to the Supreme Court, and we'll see what happens. I just think it's, you know, I don't want to come across, I'm not against tribal anything, you know, and that we should, you know, make sure that their things are restored in some manner. But when you're talking about ripping out dams for fish that there's already a section, and I'm sure there's arguments about that, but enough getting over the dams, I don't understand how you can impact millions of people's budgets and their livelihood and cargo being transferred. I don't understand how that is taking in the big, for a few people you're doing this, and what about the larger group? That's what doesn't make sense to me. So did your mic go off? Let me see something, Mark. It should still be on. Are you there? We're having a technical difficulty. It's not a power outage yet at this point. I wanted to ask Mark what people can do. Mark, try turning your phone the other way. Mark, see that? Go. Now, can you hear me? Is it there? Oh. So, let's see if we can get him back on here. We'll be editing. We don't always edit our shows, but we will be editing this one. I'll get him to try coming back in. We'll see what happens here. There you are. Are you there?
And then I couldn't hear you anymore.
It's okay. I got to edit this anyway, so we're good.
All right. Sorry about that.
No, you're fine. You're fine. So let me do this. I don't want people to get too confused. So what can people do out here in our viewing audience in Oregon, Washington, Montana, Idaho, what can they do to support you and the fight and to get involved in this process? Because I think if people don't in numbers write their congressional people or do whatever you're going to advise people to do, it's going to happen. I mean, we just see too many of these things happen because people get all woke on us and they, you know, scream climate change and, you know, it's our fault, it's man's fault. So we should all pay 50% more for our power. And I think that's bullshit. And what can they do? What can people do at this point, Mark?
Great question, Rick. I was just thinking of going down the same topic there. Our only option right now is for ratepayers, your listeners, to contact their member of Congress, their senator, their representative, and demand that Congress exercise its authority over this issue. Representative Dan Newhouse of Washington has drafted four bills that I saw recently. They would clarify and strengthen Congress's authority over issues on operational changes or breaching of the dams, impacts to ratepayers. One is a resolution. But as I mentioned earlier in our show, Congress has the sole authority over whether or not federal dams can change the way they're operated or whether they can be breached. And any money can be spent on those operational changes or breaching. Congress needs to flex its authority and make sure that this agreement cannot be executed because of that congressional authority and congressional appropriations power.
So Mark, when is this, if this were to go through, when would that happen? I mean, is there a date?
Well, the operational changes could happen immediately if Congress doesn't exercise its authority. The administration could order the Department of Energy, the Bonneville Power Administration, and the Army Corps of Engineers to implement operational changes at the dams. And what I mean by that is change the way the flow goes through the turbines in the spillway at these dams to make them time that flow change to benefit movement of salmon, but it makes those dams less economic. They'll produce fewer megawatts, less electricity at the times that it's most needed. And therefore, the environmental groups and the six sovereigns could demonstrate, say, hey, look, these dams aren't operating much anyway. They're not producing much electricity. Their economic value is diminished, and therefore it justifies breaching them, right? So that's kind of the plan. I think they're going to implement immediate operational changes at the dams, justify their breaching, and then therefore go to Congress and say, hey, you need to authorize us to breach them because obviously not the resource that is necessary. Then they'll ask for congressional appropriations to transfer to the six sovereigns to start developing replacement power. That could be 10 years or more to get the permitting associated, get the transmission line right of way and construction operations going to connect wind and solar into the grid.
So I would guess that this process would really begin, after November 2024, when there's an election. It just seems to me that would be the timing. I would guess people would have time to start getting involved and really putting some pressure on people. And that would be a major question. If I was a person in the electorate, which I am, I would go to the people running for Congress and running for different positions in your state. And I'd be asking them, how do you feel about a 50% rise in the cost of energy? And what would that look like to you? Mm-hmm. That should be one of your questions, everyone out there, unless you're so okay with that. And if you're okay with that, more power to you. But you know what? I'm going to fight you.
Less power to you.
Yeah, less power to you. And when we have the blackouts and rolling brownouts and things like that coming in, I'll have your number and I'll call you and remind you that you made this happen. But I think, so they really need, people really need to get on this now and talk to their elected officials and be involved in that process. Because if people sit on their hands and wait, even till after November, this should be a deciding, to me, it's a deciding idea of how people feel about this. How do you feel about this plan? I want to know before I vote for you.
Yeah, and I will say, the Montana delegation from Senator John Tester, Democrat in the Senate, Steve Daines, Republican Senator, Ryan Zinke, Republican Representative, and Matt Rosendale, our Republican Representative, all four have been resolute in their opposition to this plan. Senator Tester has called the White House on multiple occasions and read them the Riot Act about this. Unfortunately, his objections fell on deaf ears. But we really need to get your listeners in Idaho and Oregon and Washington to contact their members of Congress. Particularly, Senators Cantwell and Murray have a tremendous amount of influence, I think, in this issue.
What about Wyden and in Oregon? And
absolutely, yeah. I think
they're going to be a harder nut to crack.
Harder nut to crack, but certainly, you know, if we can get a majority of Northwestern senators to express concern about this to the White House, I think that would be very helpful.
All right. Mark, thank you for coming on here and explaining that. And I love the fact with podcasts, you can just do 45 minutes and it doesn't matter, but you get everything out that you possibly think that you can. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it kind of flew by. I really appreciate the opportunity. And You know, it's an issue here I'm very concerned about, very passionate about as a Montanan and a ratepayer. And I just hope we can get this thing turned around in time.
Okay. Mark, hang in the green room just for a minute while I do the close. I've got some ideas for you I want to share with you.
Okay.
Okay, hang on just a sec. All right, you're welcome. All right, you guys, so there you go. That is your lesson on what could happen. And I keep in mind, these are things you need to keep in mind. This was done in secret. It wasn't supposed to be out. You weren't supposed to know about this. Somebody leaked it, but it really did happen, and it really is happening. So how do you feel about that? How do you feel about that? And then you need to go to your representatives, your House of Representatives folks, and your senators, and you need to tell them what you think of this plan. Because, and then, you know, when you were born, God gave you a brain and he gave you a heart. And you're supposed to use them in conjunction with each other when you make a decision. So just because it feels good doesn't mean it is good. Because it feels good to think, oh, I want to save all those fish. What doesn't feel good or come across as good is when your neighbors who are very poor are suffering even more for that, are paying the price. And when you're not able to get your goods, and when you're having brownouts and blackouts and those kind of things, all those decisions matter. And you have to use your intelligence and your compassion together. You can't just let people play on that. And don't believe everything you hear. Because there's a lot of people, obviously there's some folks who have a vested interest in this happening, and a political interest in this happening. So you got to ask yourself some questions. And then remember how the Constitution begins. Not with we the legislature, not with we the Senate, not with we the president, not with we the environmentalists. It starts we the people. And that's you and me. And we have the power to make change. So get off your butt and do something about it. Because if you don't vote and you don't say something and you come back after it's already too late and say something, you don't get any opportunity to complain because you're part of the problem. I'm Rick Dancer. This is Get Real with Rick Dancer. That's about as real as it gets. Good night. Yeah.